The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. We're going to talk with Barbara Ann Reich this hour. She is a noted journalist, political thinker, cellular immunologist as well. That's where she started her life. She's an author of 17 books, including Nickel and Dimed and Bait and Switch, which you've talked to her about when they came out. She just published Bright Sided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. She takes this journey from her own battle, even though she might put it that way, with breast cancer, but takes it into our world of the financial crisis, of how capitalism, the corporate structure, uses positive thinking to really destroy spirit in America, the spirit of resistance in America, and more, and its roots from its battle against this Calvinist origin, the Calvinist origins of this country, and positive thinking being a battle against that, and where that has led us in today's world in the 21st and 20th century. And Barbara Ann Reich, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, good to be with you, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join us, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, or log on to the Facebook page where we've already started a conversation about this book and this topic. We'll read your comments on the air. Some interesting ones have already come in from those of you who seem to have read the book. So we'll get to those in just a moment as well. 410-319-8888. Let's start with the where this book started. And I had an interesting conversation about the how the book started. My fiance, we also went through breast cancer with her. I'll tell you a bit of story about it because it ties into your reaction to this as well. But talk about how this sojourn started with your diagnosis and with you being diagnosed with breast cancer.
Well, it was an unpleasant shock, to say the least. But the second shock was when I began to reach out on the internet looking for support, really, and information. What I found instead was very different. What I was getting was this constant advice to be positive, to be cheerful, to the extent of embracing breast cancer as a good thing. The idea was that, you know, it'll make you more spiritual or evolved or something when you get through it. The other idea, which was even more sinister, I thought, was that you would not get better unless you had a good attitude. And that is widely believed. All this happened to me 8 years ago, but that, you know, remains a kind of a dogma which has been completely undermined by, you know, research. You know, it just shows it's not true. Your attitude is not going to affect whether you survive or not from cancer. But that's what I encountered, and it really upset me.
I mean, you encountered it in some very interesting ways. I mean, first of all, when you attempted to go on the internet and respond by putting something up as angry.
That was my subject line, yeah, angry.
Right. But your response was maybe not what you expected.
No, I wrote what I thought was not a rant. It was very short, and this was on the Komen Foundation message board. Komen Foundation is the biggest of the breast cancer organizations in the United States. And I just went angry, and I mentioned, hey, you know, we got an epidemic of a disease. We don't know what causes it. You know, why not? Two, I said, you know, I'm angry because the forms of treatment are so toxic and debilitating. And I was thinking particularly of chemotherapy, you know, which is a very heavy-handed approach to destroying cancer cells. It destroys a lot of other cells in the process. Anyway, I thought it didn't sound too crazy. And then I got back, immediately a response saying, Barb, you've got to run, not walk, to the nearest counselor. You know, that I was sick. You know, I was sick not with cancer, or not only with that, but also with this bad attitude problem.
So, I mean, talk about why led to this entire book. I heard you say on Amy Goodman's show when she was talking to you about this book, your response to her, when I really kind of enjoyed your response, you said, this book could have been called What I Learned from Breast Cancer to Help Me Understand the Financial Meltdown, which I thought was a great subtitle for the book. They should have done that.
Right. I think subtitle's long enough as it is. But, yeah. But So this whole cancer experience came fortunately and went. I mean, fortunately went.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was, doing research and reporting on more economic issues in the middle of this decade. And I noticed something which really struck me, and that is that when white-collar people are laid off by their corporations, which was going on all the time before the recession, too, but in smaller numbers, they are the first message they're likely to get at the outplacement firm or wherever they go to is think positively about losing your job.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a bad thing. This is really an opportunity to transition into something so much better. And, oh, my God, this sounds familiar. You know, you take people who have really been kicked in the teeth by some, circumstances in their life, and they tell them, nothing wrong. There's nothing to complain about. Just put on a smiley face and go with the program. So that's what got me going, made me start thinking, what is this culture, this ideology of positive thinking in America? And it really is very American. This is something the United States and people, Americans, invented, and that we export all over the world now.
I'm going to come back to the breast cancer in a few minutes because, there's some things I really want to explore with you there that the kind of where the anger comes from and how it's so demeaning of women the way we do things when it comes to breast cancer, how you looked at that, the whole pink issue. But you just touched on something I really think is important to explore first, and let's come back to breast cancer. I know most people like to start this interview with breast cancer, but I want to take it somewhere else first, which is that talk about that history. Talk about where the roots of this came from in terms of what appears, and some of you argue, the rebellion against the Calvinist tradition in America.
I was, of course, I'm a kind of a historian by nature, and could trace this back to the 19th century, to the middle of the 19th century, in fact. And I actually have a lot of sympathy for the originators of the positive thinking movement because they were rebels against the dominant Calvinist theology of the time. And the Calvinist or Puritan theology said, hey, we're all damned, pretty much. We're wretched sinners. God is not going to let very many people into heaven, and he's already decided who they are, so there's no hope. And that ideology actually made people sick, at least middle-class women, men and women, I should say, who had the time to be sick,
mm-hmm.
It was this, epidemic of invalidism. And then along came some very interesting independent-minded characters who said, hey, wait a minute, it's not that bad. You don't have to be sick. You're not damned. God doesn't hate you. Let's try to look at the world a little more positively, etc. So it started. And as I said, I'm sympathetic. That was good. They cured a lot of people from their vague invalidism and symptoms. Of course, they couldn't cure things like, diphtheria or yellow fever or anything like that. But they could, something psychosomatic they could really help with. That was the beginning of it in the 19th century. By the 20th century, though, this whole idea of positive thinking has gone out of the bounds of, I shouldn't say out of the bounds of religion because it's always been a part of American religion,
mm-hmm.
but it became increasingly a sort of get-rich-quick formula. You want success, you want prosperity, you want health, whatever it is you want, all you have to do is visualize it, and it will come to you because your thoughts are that powerful.
Now, this is, though, a deeply held belief by many people in America, many people who listen to the show, and I must say that even I and many others that I know are kind of infected with these kind of thinking sometimes. I mean, it's because it is really pervasive. I mean, when you trace the lineage of the Christian Science movement and to Dale Carnegie and Norman Vincent Peale and then on to you talk a lot about the Osteens in your book, this prosperity gospel preaching Osteens and the positive psychology movement inside of the corporate world. I mean, you Jack Welch, Martin Seligman, and those kind of people, and we can talk about some of those folks during the course of this hour. But you, this is something that you, that the way you're tracing it, what I'm really interested in is how it has become part of our social fabric, really.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's so pervasive, Mark, that it's almost hard to separate from the background. I mean, we're saturated in these messages. Think positively. Your attitude controls everything, et cetera. And we, you know, I have to admit, I hadn't really confronted it ever until the breast cancer episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really upset me because I thought it was like a kind of victim blaming. I had not brought this disease on myself, and I knew, you know, that there's not much I could do to change my anger about it. And I didn't like being told that then I was responsible for my own death. But it's the same with, you know, with unemployment, other things. Oh, well, it just depends on how you want to look at it. There's nothing really, nothing is being done to you that's bad. No environmental problem, no economic problem, but, you know, just cheer up and accept it. That's the ideology, Mark. And if you're still into that, we have to discuss this.
But Barbara Ann Reich is with us talking about her latest work, Brightsided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. And many of you, the churches you go to, the way you think about our lives, we think about positive thinking as being the key to what makes us better as human beings and what makes us better as society. I can see from the Facebook discussion going on right now on the Mark Steiner Facebook page, and you can join that discussion or join us here live at 410-319-8888, which we think about this whole battle over the idea of positive thinking. I mean, part of it is when I first started reading the book, I mean, I was very torn by this whole thing because I think on the one hand, from reading the book, and there's ample evidence for this, and I agree with it completely, that positive thinking has dampened down a lot of the anger of social movements in this country to take on what is happening to us, A. But B, I think of all the people I know who work very hard in different places, who are battling addiction, battling to get their lives better on a personal level, and part of that for them is also this power of positive thinking, of thinking, I can be better than this. And so talk about that contradiction.
Well, I call it the powerlessness of positive thinking because it is so individualized. You know, if you just look at yourself as one person, there's probably not a whole lot that you can do to, say, end poverty or the economic horror that so many Americans are going through right now. Individually, no. But that's the powerlessness, is that all of this is framed in terms of the individual and his or her attitude. If you look at things a different way, which I should think would not be foreign to you, Mark,
mm-hmm.
You'd be saying, what can we do together to change this? It is, you know, it is not our faults, like individually or collectively, that this economy collapsed on us. And to change things around so the priorities really reflect human need, that's an effort that takes people putting their shoulders together. It's a collective effort.
So when you go back to what happened during the breast cancer episode and the difference between, let's say, a man who gets prostate cancer and a woman who has breast cancer and how the world treats those two people.
Well, you know, the prostate cancer victim is going to get some of the same stuff about having a positive attitude and, you know, they're afflicted by that. But what goes on with women, and breast cancer is primarily a women's disease, is a real infantilization. Very early on in my whole encounter with breast cancer, I was in a waiting room for the radiologist. I'm looking through the local newspaper. I come across a classified ad for a pink breast cancer teddy bear. And I thought, oh, my God. And that was a big existential turning point for me because I realized I am not afraid of dying, but I am terrified of dying with a pink teddy bear stuck under my arm. Don't let me go that way, all right? And then another thing was that there was a foundation at that point in New York City that was giving out rather generous tote bags to women undergoing breast cancer treatment. And I managed to get hold of one of these tote bags. It had some pieces of jewelry in it and moisturizers and, you know, all kind of little feminine things like that. I mean, cheap jewelry and so on. And then it had a box of crayons. So I called this foundation up and I said, you know, this is a very nice thing for you to do, give away these tote bags, but what's with the crayons? And the answer I got was, well, that's just in case you want to, you know, like, express your feelings and jot something down. I said, oh, my God, yeah. I am a writer. We do not use crayons. I lost it.
But that was that,
you know,
I think...
How much could we, you know, I thought, why take somebody in this, in, you know, what is really a crisis in their lives, and then try to turn them into a baby again?
It would be like, as I think you said and written, that it would be like if I had prostate cancer and someone put a little kind of a matchbox truck in there to make me feel better.
Right. Would you feel better?
No, I would not feel better. So in all of this, though, I think that the connection to make for people, though, because I think that we are in this world where when people are hit with poverty, we're hit by the rampant diseases like breast cancer, which nobody is bothering to put money into to find its real cause in America. I mean, we put all this money into studying BRCA1 and 2 genes, but we don't put any money into studying what may be the environmental industrial causes for a disease like that. We have that, people losing their homes and people having a difficult time making it, and that is really... Part of what's grabbing America now is the way to get through this is to think positively about it, to think that I can live a better life. I can be a better human being. If I just think positively, good things are going to happen to me. But that's one of the that's one of the key things that you're addressing in this book, that you're kind of attacking in many ways in this book.
Yeah, no, and, you know, one of the areas where I really get upset about this sort of positive thinking ideology is with respect to the poor. If you apply for TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, which is all we have left of what used to be welfare, you will probably be sent, you will be sent to a private agency under contract to the government, where you will be given big pep talks about being positive and how that is a key to prosperity. You just have to be positive. You haven't been positive enough. That's why, you know, you've been in this morass of poverty. Well, that is just outright victim blaming. And I, you know, I want to draw an end to that right now.
Let's go to the phones here and let folks join this conversation with Barbara Ann Reich about her latest work, which is just a really, it's one of those books just like Nickel and Dimed and Bait and Switch that you have to argue with and chew on. 410-319-8888. The book is Bright-Sided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. Or the other subtitle that I really prefer, which is one that she said on Amy Goodman's show, What I Learned from Breast Cancer to Help Me Understand the Financial Meltdown. 410-319-8888. James and Odington, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Well, James, welcome.
So I had a couple questions.
Sure.
Maybe I can get at least one in.
Go ahead.
So I've watched that show, The Secret, and I have some friends that think it's kind of hocus pocus, but I also have some friends that believe in the law of attraction. And the law of attraction says that when you put out good energy, and, you know, it's like driving down the road, if you're flicking people off and cutting people off, most likely you're going to get cut off and get flicked off. But if you put out some more positive energy, even if the world doesn't really change, what you see in the world changes. So I just wanted to know on what, you know, what our guests thought of that, and if she thought that was all hocus pocus or BS.
All right, hold on. We can get to your second question, Joe. I think we have time for that. You want to grab that one first, Barbara?
Yeah. No, I agree. When you're with other people, you can, you know, you can just send out vibes that are really, really nasty and surly, and that's what you'll get back. But the idea of the law of attraction, which is certainly not confined to that bestseller, The Secret, is that your mind actually controls the universe. The universe, and this is not my phrase, it's theirs, is like a big mail order department. You just send your order in, and one of the kinds of things that, you know, is most commonly recommended is this is around money or material things, and send your order in, and somehow then they will come to you through this magical power of thought. They ask them, what, huh? How could that happen? And you'll get some kind of real gobbledygook about quantum physics, which, trust me, has nothing to do with quantum physics. So I think it's completely delusional. It's called magical. It should be called magical thinking. It really is amazing that so many people would believe that.
James, you had another question?
So, I mean, it sounds like I definitely don't go through life believing that if I just feel I'm going to be successful, I will. I realize I have to take steps and I have to make things happen in my life. But I feel like it's almost like what you're trying to tell us to focus on is, you know, life does suck. I've been dealt a bad hand. So, you know, there's nothing good to come out of that. I've had two aunts that have battled cancer. One of them had cancer in 13 of her thyroids. And the doctor basically said she was done. And through, you know, like Deepak Chopra type of, you know, thinking, not just thinking positively, but trying to envision herself being healthy, and of course eating healthy and doing all the things that you have to do, taking the correct steps, she whooped cancer.
Well, I'm glad to hear that in your aunt's case. But, you know, when you look at all the studies, there's nothing that bears out. It doesn't hold up. I mean, some people are luckier than others or have different kinds of
cancer. So it's luck? It's all luck?
Who knows? I mean, why am I alive now and not someone else who was, you know, just as deserving of life as me and probably had a much better attitude at the time?
Maybe it's because you said, I deserve to live, and I'm going to go out there and take life by the hands and grab the bull by the horns, and I'm going to whoop this bull. But if you thought the bull was going to whip you, you might be dead on the ground. It might be your perspective.
I have to disagree, though. My attitude really was bad. I did not think of cancer as something I could whip or battle with. I know it's runaway cells in the body. I unfortunately cannot control them with my mind.
Your body is only controlled by your mind.
James just said, Barbara, is that's part of the debate in America, debate in people's minds. Not just in America, but if you look at kind of whether it's Buddhist meditation or Hindu yogic traditions, the question of mind over body is a very real one for people.
Oh, and it's a very fascinating question, scientifically too. My background is in biology. And I really think we need to know a lot more about how the mind and the body interact. You know, there's no question. It's not simple. But I think there are illnesses and there are conditions which really don't have anything to do with what you're thinking or fantasizing or hoping or wishing, unfortunately, or not. And I think what I've been hearing recently from oncology nurses, for example, is that they're sick of this positive thinking stuff that is laid on to cancer patients.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like it's a burden. And there's a person who's really not doing well, perhaps physically, and yet they're being told by their family and by people, oh, just cheer up. You know you can whip this. And there's never a point where anybody can calmly reflect on the reality and the distinct possibility of dying.
Well, I mean, I think there are many examples of people who had a very quote-unquote positive attitude about the cancer they had, and it didn't stop them from dying.
That's right.
You know.
This is one reason I don't even call myself a cancer survivor, because it seems to imply that somehow I am better than people who did not survive. That I'm somehow braver or fought it harder. I can't say that's true. And I think we need a little more respect for those who succumb.
And what about what you write about in terms of how this culture of positivity, the science of positivity, has taken over the corporate world?
Well, it started, and let's not call it science here without question.
I had a quote around that. I'm sorry.
Okay, good. Well, what my research says is that this really began to catch on in a big way in the corporate world in the 80s with the era of downsizing. Before that, you would certainly find positive thinking being used to boost the morale of the sales force. People like Norman Vincent Peale, who was in the 50s. You know, his book was very, very popular and given out to with salespeople and given out to them sometimes by their employers and so on. Hard to be a salesman, I admit that. But then by the late 80s, all kinds of people were being laid off pretty routinely. Downsizing became practically a fad in corporate America and a way to drive up your stock prices quickly. So the question is then, how do you manage a workforce when you no longer can offer the traditional reward, which was job security, promotion, et cetera? Everybody knows the job is temporary. Everybody knows you can be laid off whether you're good at it or not. And the answer to that was positive thinking. Bring in the motivational speakers. Put up motivational posters on the wall. Bring in the career coaches and all of those sorts of people to say everything is great. Anybody who complains is a whiner, and we don't want to be around them.
And we have to get a short break here. In fact, we can talk about that. That happened in many ways to the lead up of this crash that we have. We'll talk about that and more. Our guest this hour is Barbara Ehrenreich, whose latest book is what we're talking about, Bright Sided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. Urbanite Radio Stories on the Mark Steiner Show are made possible by National Connections Academy, an accredited online private school with affordable tuition for grades K through 12. Visit nationalconnectionsacademy.com for more information. We'll be right back, and Anthony will be the first caller up. We'll go to all these very interesting comments that we have on email. I'll leave you with one as we go to break. Sheldon Laskin writes in, I'm reminded of an old Woody Allen line. I'd like to leave you with a positive thought, but I don't have any. Would you take two negative thoughts instead? We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. We're talking with writer, political thinker, activist Barbara Ehrenreich. Her latest book is Bright Sided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. The last time we talked to her was from her other books that she's written, of course, Nickel and Dimed, Bait and Switch, and others. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com or log on to the Mark Steiner Facebook page. If you're not a friend, we'll make you one, and you can join in on this conversation. Let's go right to the phones, as I promised. And, Anthony, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark, and good evening to your guest.
Good evening, Anthony.
I listen to your program quite often. My name is Anthony Schultz. I was a little intrigued when I turned it on this evening and listened to your guest speaker in reference to a thought process, positive or negative. I found myself coaching and giving a lot of advice to a lot of folks by giving them a better way to think. She mentioned one of the books that I used, which I thought was very positive to help change the thought process of a lot of people in Baltimore who were doing pretty bad, which is Norman Vincent Peale's book, How to Think and Grow Rich, or As a Man Thinketh, So Is He. I find it very odd that someone would write a book and spin it the way she is in reference to positive thinking may not be the best way to do things. I'm going to get to my point real quick. When it comes to health, I think we all have a perspective of, I could either accept this and just go along with it, or I could take a better mindset and say, I'm going to add to this a better thought process to try to beat it. Health is a little risky when you do that, but you should think positive. But when it comes to everything else in the world, from financial situations to whatever, I think you are the way you think. I think if you think you're going to be doomed, you're going to be doomed. If you think that you are going to get out of this somehow, whether it's a financial breakdown or a relationship type thing, you are what you're thinking.
Barbara Ehrenreich?
Well, I guess that makes me a real Grinch. So I have to say, no, I'm really disagreeing with all that. I'm saying that these assumptions of positive thinking are actually hazardous. That's what I'm arguing in my book, Bright Sided. And the big example of that I think, is the economic, the financial meltdown of 2008. I was talking before the break about how the corporate world had really embraced this ideology in the 80s, 90s, and this decade. And one of the things that meant is that they eliminated people who were, quote, negative. You know, you've got to, and all the advice, the business self-help books and advice books will say, oh, get rid of the negative people in your ranks. They'll just drag everybody down. Now, that happened to mean people who were raising questions, people who had doubts. And I give cases in Wall Street. You know, the person who said, excuse me, but I'm a little worried about our subprime mortgage exposure here, that person was silenced or booted out. The person who would say, I'm not sure about this, but I have some doubts about this housing thing. It might be a bubble, not a boom. That person is silenced or thrown out. So we went along our merry road in our bubble of being positive until very precipitously it began to just collapse.
But is there a difference, though? I guess this is what Anthony was saying. In this argument, this is something really to wrestle with. And your book, I think, makes us wrestle with these things. Is that if you take what Anthony was saying, there are a lot of is there a difference between? I'm not being very clear. Maybe clear about this. Is there a difference between the analysis that this kind of positive thinking of the corporate world, the positive thinking of what they did to our economy, and making us kind of lull ourselves into believing that everything is lovely and beautiful and I can get a house with no down payment and life is good despite my only making $12 an hour? That's A. But on the other hand, that if you're a kid, and I'm going to use this extreme example because it's the world that I know. If you're a kid in the inner city, and you're surrounded by the madness of inner city poverty every day, and people teach you to think positively about yourself so you can get through it, get an education, find a way, if you can, out. That's an individual answer, not a social answer, but it makes a lot of sense for young kids in the inner city. And that can be in any place. I'm just using that example. So, I mean, is there a balance here between paying attention to how this kind of mass positive thinking can lull us into sleep with understanding that positive thinking for individuals who are in certain situations is important?
I think you have to have both. I mean, I'm not against ambition and, you know, hard work and giving people a sense of possibility. But if you don't include in that some sense of the social forces against them, they have to do with class and race and so forth, then I think you're not doing them any favor. And let me tell you what I encounter a lot when I travel around and talk to college students, often, first-generation college students coming from poverty themselves, is that they believe all this, they're imbued with it, so they go to college, but they have to work full-time at the same time to put themselves through college. And you know what that is? That is objectively a recipe for the disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people can do that. You can't do your college work well enough if you're also holding down a full-time job. So, you know, right, and then when that happens and they start getting low grades or failing, they think, oh, I guess I'm just dumb because this was supposed to work, right? I was mm-hmm. supposed to be able to do this. And so that's, you know, when I talk to these college students, they say, you can't probably do it. Face that. There's something wrong with a country that does not provide enough support for higher education so that young people can dedicate themselves to their education for a few years. You know, don't blame yourself, in other words.
Right, don't blame yourself. Well, let's wait a minute. I'm going to read some interesting things that have come in over the web as well, some really interesting thoughts that support what you're saying, those that want to ask some questions about it. 410-319-8888. Barbara and Aaron Reich is with us. Her latest book, Brightsided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. Or you can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to their Facebook page. Let's go to Michelle in Macon, Georgia. You're on the air. Hi, Michelle. You're on the air.
A little nuts here because, quite frankly, I think that there's a disingenuousness about this discourse. I mean, part of it is that for me, I've practiced a lot of what Anthony also mentioned, and it goes far beyond sort of simple-minded positive thinking where you ignore life. It's to the contrary. I think it's a rigorous honesty about your life, about your strengths, about your weaknesses, and about how you can transform those things. It's not sort of oblivious to social conditions or social injustices, but I think it's a philosophy about how to live life and how to get through it. And I think it's not really fair to tell people that you can't make it when I think fundamentally they're wired. We're wired to make it. We're wired to love. We're wired to believe. And to tell people that you can't do it based on some reality. I mean, if I looked at my reality, I grew up on the northwest side of Baltimore, Maryland, to two very young parents, and I'm now getting a PhD, and I have a production coming. I mean, you could not have told me that I could be here, but it's in part because of a spiritual belief, and it's not an intellectual belief. You know, it's something that's profoundly spiritual that does not pay attention to the external reality, but in fact, it allows us to turn inward to another reality. So I think that we're not getting a full discussion of what this whole philosophy that she labels positive thinking really entails, if that makes any sense.
I think it's a closing comment.
I don't rule that out. You know, having a spiritual perspective in your life, I don't see that as disconnected. But look, when I tell, say, a young person, like this was most recently in Western Illinois in a small college, a young African-American woman, she said, you know, I'm not making it. I've been working full-time. I can't do it. I'm flunking out. Is not to say, oh, yes, you can, girl. You know, you just try a little harder. No, I say, you know, we've got to change things. And what I mean ultimately is I would like her and a few hundred thousand people like her marching on state capitals, marching on Washington, whatever, to say, why isn't there money for higher education? So we actually have a chance. You know, getting together to make change. Have we lost that vision?
I think the challenge, though, with what you're saying is what that means is that you're forever going outward to ask, to march, to protest, and never realizing that there is power that you have in yourself. And when you said, well, positive thinking doesn't change, I mean, there are so many other examples of people that I know, and myself personally, where it does transform the literal cellular structure of your body. And it's a profound process. It is not simply, go on, girl, you can do it, no, work harder. And I agree that I think we place some emphasis on sort of blaming people, and I think that's, you know, that's a fallacy. We shouldn't be doing that. But there is power that we have internally that transforms our environment, our mental state, our emotional state, and to constantly have to look outward for somebody to help you or solve your problem is not the answer for me either.
Michelle, thanks for those thoughts. And would you like to respond again, Barbara?
Yeah, I would just talk about ordinary life here. I spend a lot of time with small children, you know, first my own children, now my grandchildren. I cannot spend that time in a state of positive thinking. If the toddlers are off in a room by themselves and it's very, very quiet for a while, I can't say, oh, they're probably just having a great time and, you know, playing with baby Einstein or something. No, I have to assume that something terrible could be happening and peek in that door and see what's going on. And this kind of vigilance is essential to human survival and always has been.
If we have time, I'll come back to what Michelle was saying. And I think that this is, to me, for most people in America, this is the largest wrestling point with your book. And I think it's a good thing to wrestle with all this. At 410-319-8888, Michael, you're on the air. Michael,
hello?
Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Oh, great. Hi, Barbara. Hi, Mark. I find Barbara's perspective very refreshing. I just think that the whole positive thinking thing cuts across class lines, and I think that, you know, just putting a shine on everything, in a way, keeps people locked in. You know, I think that historically, if you look, there's always been negative and positive, and that's what moves things forward. You know, things don't just happen on one end of the spectrum. You know, I think there's, you know, folks, you know, I think that when I have anger or righteous indignation about a particular subject that's going on, whether it's in my family or in my work life or in the social fabric of society, if I stop and contemplate what's getting at me about that, you know, I learn things about myself and about the world, and there's movement there, there's energy, and I move forward, and I, you know, learn that way. I don't think that just putting a, you know, I could see why Barbara, you'd be, you know, extremely pissed, excuse my French, you know, coming down with, you know, cancer and having that thrown at you. So I just want to, you know, put my two cents inward. I will definitely read the book. You know, I think it's a class issue, too. I think as you move up the ladder, there's, I don't think it necessarily has to be that way, but from my perspective, it looks that way. As you get, you know, higher up the economic structure, there's definitely more padding, you know, and with the padding can come more pretense. And I think the people who are trying to really live their lives on a day-to-day basis, barely making it, I don't think they see the world that way.
Michael, thanks for your thoughts, and it is well worth reading. You should definitely read the book. Barbara?
Yeah, well, there's one, this is maybe a good point from getting, you know, since Michael's been supportive, to mention that in 2006, the author of The Secret, the book about, the, you know, that
right.
so popular, The Law of Attraction, and she was asked to how she would explain the tsunami that had occurred in 2006 in Indonesia. And I'm paraphrasing, but she said more or less, those people must have been thinking, sending out tsunami-like vibrations into the universe.
Did she really say that?
Yeah, they brought it on themselves. And I can document similar statements about Congo and Darfur from some of these positive thinkers, because everything that happens to you because some inner either strength or weakness or whatever. Now, to me, that is morally appalling. Unbelievable.
It is morally appalling. Well, let me let my listeners have a few more questions here before I come back, to be fair, because so many people are calling in here with really supportive thoughts and critical questions. 410-319-8888. Erica, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. I want to just say that I think with positive thinking that we do need to have, you know, goals, and we do need to think that we can accomplish things, but I think we also need balance. And I'm a social worker, and so one of the things that, you know, for my job when I work with people is coming up with things that are realistic, that are measurable, that are achievable. And I think if people, you know, do want to accomplish, just like the author was saying about the young woman who's working full-time and trying to go to school, or for individuals in that situation, that, you know, they may have a positive thought of, I want to accomplish college, but you have to do it in a realistic way. And that people need to have realistic goals, and that they need to be honest about what they can and cannot do, because you can't do everything. So that's my sort of comment tonight, is just really balance. And like, for instance, with the financial crisis, you know, we need to have those reasonable voices, those voices of wisdom, and say, look, this is the real situation. You know, things are going to fall apart. We just can't ignore the warning. And I think, you know, in our society today, we've got to really focus, but we have to have balanced views. Thank you. That's my comment.
Erica, thanks so much. So let's get another caller in. Jim, you're on the air.
Hello?
Jim, you're on the air.
Yeah, if you said to go in March, if you didn't first believe that the march could be effective, then why would you go in March? You have to first believe that going to do something is going to affect the change that you want to do. And if you don't believe that going and marching is going to change the world, then you wouldn't leave your house and go and march. So you first must believe that your march will succeed, and then you might go and do it. Unfortunately, marches don't succeed. You can look at all the people that marched against the last two wars. They weren't listened to, and now we're killing and destroying people. So marching isn't necessarily the best answer either. But believing in whatever you're going to do is the first step in doing it.
All right. Barbara, let's wrestle.
Well, believing, but also being willing to try something else if that doesn't work. Like, I would not respond dogmatically, oh, yeah, marches, that's the only way to change things. That's how the civil rights movement did it. That's how the anti-war movement did it in the 60s or something. I'm not going to say that. I say we try that. If that method isn't working, we rethink. So there's no it's not just belief. No, I'm saying not believe. You know, try to the best we can, then reevaluate. If that didn't work, we've got to have different tactics.
Thank you for that call. Let me read some of the things that came across the email here and talk about the rest of those a little bit here. Laura Lee was written in, too many folks these days are willing to put horror and honesty on the line to avoid having others think they're politically incorrect. I say balderdash that attitude. It's normal, human, to get riled up when your rights are trampled, whether by an individual or a government. If our forefathers hadn't risked majorly ticking off people, we'd still be in England bowing to the Queen.
That's an interesting point. In fact, I'm glad you brought in the forefathers because I think that's an interesting case that relates to this question or this comment about belief. When they signed the Declaration of Independence, they had no reason to believe they would win a Revolutionary War. Really, I mean, this was pathetic. You know, these are these scrappy little colonies going up against the British Empire. It was pretty far-fetched, really. They also knew, individually, to a man, that when they signed that document, they became, in the eyes of the law, the British law, they became traitors, and that was punishable by hanging. So they, you know, it was a scary thing to do. It was taking a big chance. And yet they didn't just sit there and say, oh, let's send independence-type vibrations off into the universe, or let's hope, or something. They took the chance, and they fought anyway.
Well, and that's a big piece of talking about why social movements have to kind of are the only way they're going to change things in a larger sense in this planet world. We've seen what's happening in Copenhagen now. If we have time, we'll come to that, because I was thinking about your views on that. David Allen, though, writes in, this is interesting. He says, it seems that forced positivity is the issue. Handing out meritless badges or everyone gets an award, positivity from within is different in that. I guess what he's saying here, it seems to me, is that people shouldn't throw out battling for a positivity inside themselves and their view of their life in the world. That doesn't contradict the need to fight for social change or to have a society where everybody is not the valedictorian.
Well, you know, I don't think we have a big problem of being overly encouraging to young people. I hear this a lot, you know. People will say, isn't a big example of this that we just spend too much time building up the self-esteem of young people in our public schools? No. No, we don't. I'm afraid not. Our schools are in bad decline physically and in terms often of the, you know, whether there were textbooks available, something like that. I wish there were more messages going out to children in the public schools that they are wonderful and deserving. Because that's really not what's happening now.
Barbara Ann Reich is with us. She's talking about her book. We're talking about her book, Brightsided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. And there are a lot of people calling in. 410-319-8888. Tondra, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Tondra.
This is a very interesting conversation. You know, Mark, I have a radio show, and I've been listening to your show. I think I may have this topic on mine. But in any event, what I want to say is real positivity that comes from within will provoke change and will provoke you to do things. I think the missing link here is the actual doing. I can sit around all day and envision having a mansion, a boat, or even better health. But unless I take those needed steps to do it, I doubt if it's going to happen. Go to school. Get that degree. Go to the doctor. Take the treatment. Change your lifestyle. Kick drugs. Kick drinking. Kick smoking. It's actually in the doing that brings about the results. Now, when I was talking to your screener, I was telling him how in churches, African-American churches, of which I am a member of and have been all my life, I've seen the evolvement of that positive thinking in terms of how it relates to Scripture. And more often now than ever before, I hear preachers saying, okay, you can be healed if you just quote the Word of God, if you read the Word of God, if you just quote it over yourself, believe it, and that's the beginning of it. But what they fail to tell their parishioners and their congregation is to go to the doctor, to research the medicine that the doctor is prescribing to you, take the treatment, change your lifestyle, get better eating habits, sleep more, okay? That's when the results come about. It's in the actual doing, but it does start from the positive, the real positive thinking that starts from within that should provoke you to take those steps that you need to take to get those needed results.
Barbara?
Yeah. No, I agree completely. Action is what makes change in the world. We've got to have the inspiration, the spirit, the confidence, the determination to act. I wouldn't say those are necessarily like positive thinking vibes. Determination can be a big part of it. But you brought up the church. It's not only African-American churches. It's a lot of, you know, white churches, insofar as we are segregated by churches, have been, you know, embraced this kind of gospel. If you go into one of the mega churches, and I've been to several during my research, you won't see crosses on the wall or images of Jesus. You know why? Because that whole story is a bummer. You know, somebody being tortured on a cross? No, we're not going there. And you have a preacher. You mentioned, Mark, earlier, Joel Osteen.
Yes, you write about him.
Gets some attention here in my book. You know, all they're saying is that God wants you to be rich. God wants you to be prosperous. And so, you know, maybe you never had any credit, decent credit before, couldn't buy a house or anything. Now somebody has come along and offered you this miraculous mortgage with no down payment, no proof of income or anything. That must be God saying you should have a house. You know, and they really, these prosperity preachers really played a role in the economic, in the financial meltdown on that end of things.
Oh, they did. Yep.
No question.
In Baltimore, they went to Wells Fargo went to churches to have them preach the gospel for people to take these mortgages.
Baltimore, you know, is a perfect example. And there's a great documentary movie about how this was done, using the black churches as a foothold to even, you know, to get people who could afford much better mortgages even to take subprimes because the companies were making more money off of the subprimes.
One final question, about 2 minutes left, Barbara. I'm curious, are you positive about what will happen in America in terms of a social political movement building to actually make some change?
You know what? I don't have to be positive. I just have to keep trying.
There you go. That's what I thought you were going to say.
I'm a fighter.
Yes, you are. And you've also written one of your wonderful books to make us really wrestle with stuff. And your books are always material to chew upon intellectually. Bright-Sided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America by Barbara Ehrenreich. You can connect to it on our website as well as the latest stuff she's been writing for the Institute for Policy Studies. Barbara, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you once again.
Oh, my pleasure.
Take care of yourself.
Bye.
We'll be right back. We're going to have a whole different look at the world when we return from this brief break. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, it's the consumption issue, with holiday tales about spending, saving, and the true price of American consumerism. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. When we return, we'll meet some folks who were homeless, addicted, in prison. Now they run marathons. Stay with us.